So yesterday we discussed five gurus: water, fire, moon, sun, and the pigeon. So what did we learn from the water yesterday? Is it sweet? Yeah, the sound is very sweet and it's pure, transparent.
Purifying.
So what is water compared to?
Devotee.
Yeah, the devotee who speaks very nicely and sweetly and charming. So did anybody try to apply this lesson to your life today? Try to speak Krishna Katha or speak sweetly? Navajita others? No pujalpa? Anybody try? It's not easy. It's not easy. So from the fire, what did we learn from the fire? Actually three lessons from the fire. What is one lesson that we learned? It is?
Hidden or revealed?
Yeah, hidden or revealed.
Can I get one paper?
Yeah, it's over there. Yeah, these are my papers. I need them. But those are for you. Yeah, hidden and revealed. And also, it's purifying.
The waves of time
are just like the flames of a fire. Always, the flame looks like it's one, so that's compared to the soul. The soul is one. But it is always changing. If the flame is never the same. Every second the flame is changing. So in the same way, the body is changing, but the soul remains the same. But we don't perceive how the body is changing every moment. So did anybody apply this lesson to your life today? Did you notice how the body is changing? But you're remaining the same. Anybody have that realization or application? And we learned from the moon a very similar thing, that the moon is getting bigger and smaller, but it actually the moon itself is not like that. It appears to be getting bigger and smaller. So the moon is compared to the soul. And the body is compared to the changing, the waxing and waning. Our body is definitely waxing and waning. It takes birth, it grows, it waxes for a while, and it starts waning. After, who was it? I think it was Buttery Narayan Prabhu. He did some research on what age are people actually happy and think they would like to be that age. So he saw that up to the age of 12, or actually 16, if you tell them you look older than you are, then they're happy. Like a 12-year-old, you tell them, oh, you look like 16, I love things. Or a small boy, oh, you look like 10 years old if he's only 5 or something. So that means they're not happy with their age. So then when you get between 16 and 24, yes, they're happy. If you tell them they're that age, they don't like to be younger or older. But then once you get past 25, then it's better to tell them, oh, you look younger. You're past 25, 26, 30. You don't look 30. You look like 16. So that's when it starts to change. So that means that people are never really satisfied with their age. Between a very, very small part of your life, are you actually satisfied? I remember I was 18 and I thought, yeah, that's okay, it's a good age. But I think that was the only time I remember I was satisfied. But otherwise, it's like, you're not. The body is really waning or waxing, and the soul is not keeping up. The soul wants to remain like between 16 and 24, and that's how we feel, actually. So then, what did we learn from the song yesterday? One lesson, very nice lesson. Yes, the sun, just like the sun is evaporating the water and then he turns it as rain when we need it. So in the same way, the saintly person, he accepts things for his livelihood, or for his Krishna consciousness, for his maintenance, and then at the proper time, when the proper person comes, he gives them away. So that we learned from the sun. Did anybody do that today? Try to. Yes, did you? We're getting the prasadam today. Yes, so that is the sun. The sun accepts and it gives away. Anybody give something away you didn't need today? Yes, so today my dear Rajas Kumar was up on the drying and the wind took it away, so we lost our dear Rajas' towel. It was a big wind today. And so I guess the wind took that away, just like the sun. So that's one lesson we learned from the sun. Another lesson is how the sun is not divided. It's reflected in so many things. So the soul is reflected in so many bodies, even in this life. Every second we have a new body, because every second it changes. And so, but the soul does not change. And the last guru for yesterday was the pigeon. And what did we learn from the pigeon?
Not to be too much attached.
Not to be overly attached. Atisneha, excessive attachment, is not good. It will cause anxiety, disease, worry, so many things, and suffering. Basically, if you're too attached, you suffer. It causes great suffering. And so, therefore, it's better to have a proper perspective. You have your attachment for your family and your children, but see it in the proper light. Always have Krishna there in the center, and then it will be okay. So, our gurus, did anybody try to apply that lesson of the pigeon today? Yes? No? Okay. So, today our gurus will be the python. Does everybody know what a python is? Anybody not know what is a python? A big snake. Yes, a python can eat a cow or a person whole, can swallow you whole. I have friends who live in South America and they tell me that there are such pythons in South America that they can just gobble up a whole big cow in one gulp. So that is a python. Ocean, we know very well. Moth. Moth is the flying, small flying creature, like a butterfly, but very small. The honeybee and the elephant. So, first, from the python, we will learn to accept what comes of its own accord. So many things come to us. And what we learn from the python just sits there and waits for food to come to him without endeavoring. So he shows the qualities of peacefulness and patience. Of course, not that we should not endeavor. We should endeavor for our livelihood and not just sit there and wait for something to come, because it's not going to come. But the lesson that we learn is to not over-endeavor. Just don't over-endeavor for things that you don't need. And that's the whole advertising industry, is to tell you that you need this. You need so many things. And my son, he had a job one time selling things. And he told me selling means you have to convince people that they need something that they don't need. That's what he said selling means. Yeah, that they don't really need it, but you have to convince them that it's a necessity. They're going to need this thing. So that is this material world. We don't really need it, actually. We don't even need this material body.
Yes.
But We are convinced that we really need it, and this is our necessity, and we need this body, and our whole life revolves around the body. So we should accept even food which comes of its own accord, whether it's delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. I think if you live in the ashram, then this is a good practice. Perhaps, I don't know, here the prasad seems pretty good. It's pretty good here. But in India, you have a lot of practice in this. So you don't become so active for material gain, but remain alert to your actual self-interest. And actually, a devotee who is absorbed in preaching Krishna consciousness, he automatically receives whatever he needs for his personal maintenance. And Indradumna Swami, he told one story that one time he was traveling with Srila Prabhupada on the airplane to Bhaktivedanta Manor in London. And so when they got to the London airport, one of Srila Prabhupada's suitcases was lost, or was behind. And so Indradumna Swami, he waited for Srila Prabhupada's suitcase while Prabhupada and all the devotees went to the temple. And it took about an hour or so, and he had to take a taxi back to the temple. And it was a very heavy suitcase. And when he got there, he had to bring it up to two flights of stairs. And it was a very winding, I remember that bird place. Well, that was bird place, not bird place. Prabhupada was up two or three flights of stairs. And he was asking the devotees to help. First of all, he said, is there any prasadam? And he said all the devotees were lying on the ground holding their stomachs. So they just had a feast. Oh, no, Prabhu, we just had a big feast. There's nothing left. And then he said, well, can you help me make a suitcase? I said, oh, no, we ate too much. We can't possibly move. So there he was with his big heavy suitcase, and he had to lug it up all the stairs. And then he got up there. He was so tired and frustrated, and he just kind of burst open Prabhupada's door, and then he didn't realize Prabhupada was right there. He walked in and put the suitcase down, and he offered obeisances to Prabhupada. And while he was offering obeisances, Prabhupada slapped on the back really hard. And then he got up, and the servant had his mouth open. He said, did you hear what Prabhupada said to you? And his Prabhupada went to the other room, and then he said, no, I didn't hear what he said. He said, now in this life there is so much struggle and so much endeavor. But when I take you back to Godhead, then everything will be very easy. And so that is what we are looking forward to. That we have this goal of going back to home, back to Godhead. So therefore, whatever it takes, we should do it. That's where our endeavor should be, and that's the lesson of the Python. Our real endeavor should be for spiritual life, and not for trying to get a big bank balance and all these things. These things will not make us happy. So from the Python, we learn to live simply, use our energy for self-realization. And the next question is, how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? If you read the diary of Srila Prabhupada when he first arrived in America, he was writing down every penny he spent. Every penny. And he would walk instead of take the bus. In India, we were told not to take taxis when we first came in the 70s. We had to take buses. And these buses were packed. And they were very old, falling apart buses. And you would, and people were hanging out the door, and so the bus would lean to one side because the people were hanging out the doors. In fact, I saw a funny, it's not like that now, but I saw an advertisement for a cell phone in India, and all the people were in the bus, and they were going from one side of the bus to try to get to catch the signal, and then they would go to the other side, and the bus would go this way, and the bus would tilt that way. So it used to be that way. Actually, in India, the buses were like, and we probably said we had to take the bus and not the taxi. We couldn't make phone calls because they were too expensive. We had to write letters instead, snail mail. And usually, if you would write a letter from India, it wouldn't get there. And the letter from there wouldn't get here. In fact, Hari Griva, when he first came to Vrindavan, he saw all the mail going down the Jamuna River. So it was very hard to, I guess that's one way to get it, but I don't think, yeah, anyway, it was all to save money. And Sri Prabhupada, he went to the USA with no money, but he stayed in New York City and everything became successful, but it took time. So he was always telling us to try to save money, like the Bhaktan. In Vrindavan, he was actually, when in India, Sri Prabhupada was actually taking care of us. Sometimes he would act like the temple commander. And remember one time when I was the pujari in Calcutta, he saw the ghee announced for Jerry and he called us up and said, "Who has done this?" I think he should have said, "Who has not done this? Who has not polished the rest?" But anyway, he was like, one time our GBC in India quit, and he, Prabhupada, was our GBC for two months. And so one time in Vrindavan, he was looking over the accounts, and he was seeing how everything was being purchased, and he said, "You should buy quantities of things, not just a little bit every day. You should buy, you can buy cheaper if you buy in quantity." So the devotee in charge of shopping bought a lot of bananas. That was his first idea. Okay, we should buy quantity. Of course, that was not a good idea because all the bananas are rotten very quickly. And Prabhupada said, in Prabhupada chastised him, he said, "You bought bananas because you are a monkey, that's why." That's why you like bananas. And then because in Vrindavan, it's full of monkeys. And they like bananas. So, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, before Prabhupada went to the West, he saw Srila Prabhupada standing at the gate of one large house, and it was very hot in Delhi. And he was just waiting there. So this god brother, Madhav Maharaj, he asked, "What are you waiting for, Maharaj?" And Prabhupada said, "Oh, I'm waiting to get a 5-rupee donation from here." And after some hours during a very hot day, the Brahmachari, he was Brahmachari then, he came back from where he was doing his shopping, said, "So, do you have the 5 rupees, probably still standing there?" Said, "No, the gentleman has not yet arrived, but I will wait." And so then the brahmachari said, "Let's go, I'll give you those 5 rupees. Prabhupada said, "Can you give me those 5 rupees every month?" And he agreed. I agreed. He said, "Is there anything else you need? Are you short of anything?" He said, "He seems so poor at the moment. If you need anything, I'll get it for you. Please come with me." His clothes were torn, he said. So he said, "I got him new clothes, brought him to our temple. I sold him. Instead of 5 rupees, I'll give you 10 rupees. So this was Srila Prabhupada. Although he was so opulent after many, many years, he could live in any temple, any country of the world. But he started in a very poor condition. But he was determined. So we learn from the Python not to over-endeavor, but to use, if we have any energy, extra energy, we should use that for self-realization. So how can you apply this to your life tomorrow? Does anybody have some ideas what you could do to apply this lesson of the Python? What's that? Okay, so tomorrow you could, the whole day tomorrow you can practice just being satisfied with whatever comes. Whatever prasad you get, be satisfied. Don't over-endeavor. Whatever money you get, whatever, of course tomorrow is a holiday, I think. So whatever happens tomorrow, accept it as Krishna's mercy and be satisfied. So that's the lesson of the Python. Any other ideas? How can we apply this to our life? Yes.
Ajagravati,
yes.
The scientists keep on inventing new things and other things that these devotees can use them in devotion.
Yes, devotees can use them, that's right. Yes, the snake goes and he makes a hole, the snake goes and he goes into the hole of the rat or the mouse and he lives there very comfortably. And so the devotees, they do that. The other people, just like in the morning walk, Srila Prabhupada would say, "See, everyone else in the morning, they're going so fast in their cars here and there, but They are not coming to the park, but we are enjoying the park. They need the park, and we are, the devotees are enjoying the park, because we are not rushing here and there in our cars to go to work. So, because in those days, nobody lived outside the temple. Everybody was in the temple when Prabhupada was here. Devotee meant in the temple. Now it's completely different. Everybody is outside the temple, so it's quite a different thing. But in those days, everyone was just there, and we had all the time to walk with Srila Prabhupada and do service in the temple. Okay, so our next guru is the ocean. And you're so fortunate, you're right, living right next door to your guru here. You have very close to your guru, the ocean. And the ocean will learn also some lessons. First of all, gravity, brave and undisturbed. A sage is like the ocean. Because his knowledge is never disturbed, he's like the unfathomable and unsurpassable ocean. And so the second lesson is the ocean is undisturbed in abundance and scarcity. So a pure devotee possesses great spiritual power, so he cannot be surpassed or overwhelmed. Now during the rainy season, so many swollen rivers rush to the ocean, and during the summer, the river is very shallow, reduce their supply of water, but the ocean does not swell up during the rainy season or dry up in the hot summer. It remains the same. In the same way, Saint Devotee has accepted Krishna as the goal of his life. Sometimes we'll receive by providence great material opulence, and sometimes he'll find himself materially destitute. However, such a devotee does not rejoice in a flourishing condition, nor is he morose when poverty attacks him. So in the early days, as I said, I think in one of my other classes, we were at one point, we were living in Boston Temple, and somebody heard Prabhupada say, you should only eat 2 chapatis and dal for lunch. So we had to do that for about 2 weeks, and 8 chickpeas in the morning was a little porridge. So in London, the devotees were doing this, and they were fixing up the manor, but they were all enthusiastic and working very hard. So it didn't matter to them that, you know, what probably they were eating. They were very happy. So the lesson that we learned from the ocean is sometimes we get a lot of opulence and sometimes we have nothing. But in both cases, we should remain like the ocean, grave and undisturbed, happiness and stress. Now there's other lessons, one more lesson you can learn from the ocean, how it's not disturbed. There's a very beautiful purport in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it describes how the waves of a river are flowing incessantly and they cannot be stopped. And the waves of a river are compared to the desires for sense gratification. Yes, so many waves, one after the other, one after the other. But the waves of the river are flowing into the ocean. And when the tide comes in, then it overwhelms the river. So when I used to live in Goa in India for a few years, right on the ocean. So during the monsoon, you cannot swim in the ocean. You can only swim in the river. So when we were swimming in the river that went into the ocean, it was very interesting when the tide would come in from the ocean. The river would start flowing upstream, and the taste changed from sweet to salty. So it's quite amazing. And how does this compare? A devotee who has intelligence plans so many things for Krishna's service that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve Krishna. So the ocean is compared to the desires for devotional service, and when you're actually in the ocean, then that ocean comes in and overwhelms your stagnant desires for sense gratification. So this is the lesson of the ocean, how the ocean is so powerful, and the devotee has mastered the art of being equipoised in happiness and distress. But you have to practice your whole life to do this. It takes a lifetime, actually. You can't just start at the beginning and become equipoised and detached. These come does it come automatically when we practice Krishna consciousness? So we learn from the ocean that we need to endure our karma, whether good or bad, and embrace it graciously. Be grave in happiness and stress. So in Nectar of Devotion, it explains what it means to be grave. A person who does not express his mind to everyone, or whose mental activity and plan of action are very difficult to understand, is called grave. So Prabhupada said about gravity, grave means don't talk nonsense. Don't waste time. If you've got time, chant Hare Krishna. But don't talk nonsense. So here's one way you can practice this lesson of the ocean is, again, don't talk nonsense tomorrow. So watch yourself, what you are speaking tomorrow. Now, here are some examples of Srila Prabhupada's gravity. One of my godbrothers, Chipurari, asked Srila Prabhupada, is it true that spiritual master will come back if the disciple falls down? What do you think Srila Prabhupada answered to that question? Yes or no? Yes. He said, yes, but don't take advantage. he was always telling us, finish in this life. Go back to diet in this life. Many, many times he told us. And we thought, you know, we can do that. We can do it in this life. And we felt like that. We still feel like that, actually. Well, of course, now it's getting, the closer we get to death, then the more we realize how far away we are from that goal. We may take a few breaths. But Srila Prabhupada was telling Ellen Ginsberg, they were talking about Kali Yuga and how it will become more and more degraded. And so, yeah, Srila Prabhupada was saying by the time Kali Yuga is finished, and the devotees, if there are any devotees, they'll have to live in caves because they will just be hunted and eaten. And so, Ginsberg said, so your disciples, they will be there? And Prabhupada said, no, my disciples are very advanced. They are chanting Hare Krishna. They will be already back to Godhead. And Ellen said, well, and what about the rest of us? And so then Prabhupada leaned to Ellen, and Ellen leaned to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, Ellen, it's I eat you and you eat me. That's what will happen at the end of Kali Yuga. So if you don't go back to Godhead, it won't be good. So we should stay on this path, stay on the boat of Krishna consciousness and go back to Godhead. Now, in the beginning years, there was a picture of Srila Prabhupada, and he looked very, very grave. And one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada that, you look so grave in that picture. And Prabhupada said, that was a moment of ecstasy. So we have no idea what is spiritual happiness. We cannot understand the mind of a pure devotee. So another devotee, he met Prabhupada in Dallas, and there was traveling buses in 1975 with Tamakrishna Maharaj and Shijan Maharaj. So Prabhupada went on one of the buses at lunchtime, and the cook offered him a big plate full of savories, fried vegetables, milk sweets, tropical fruits. So Prabhupada took just one little piece of papaya and ate it, and he said, a yogi requires very little food to maintain his body. So that's like the python. And then he took the rest of the fruit dish and gave it to a baby boy who leaned forward from his mother's arms and he snatched a big strawberry. Prabhupada said, children like red. And then after that, the child's father, one of Prabhupada's disciples, left Krishna consciousness and was encountering all sorts of personal problems. And Prabhupada spoke to the wife, and he said to her, tell him to come back. He's a very indulgent boy. And Prabhupada looked at the child and he said, now you become a pure devotee and rescue your father. And Prabhupada started crying, and his gratitude affected the whole atmosphere. He said, it is like when I cut my finger, the pain is felt in the mind as well. Similarly, when my disciple has difficulty, I feel the pain also. And so Prabhupada was very grave. And he was very, it affected him a lot when he would lose somebody. So how can we apply the lesson of the ocean to our life, to tomorrow.
Don't get affected by any desires.
Don't get affected, okay? Yeah. Be equipoised like the ocean. Remember the ocean. Just remember. If you're having trouble, remember the ocean. Okay. The ocean is like this. It is when it gets many things, when it gets, it doesn't overflow, and when it loses water, it's not disturbed. So you have to be like the ocean. Like I was in New Zealand, and it was quite amazing how many people lost so many, their job, their house. I met one lady on the beach, and she was, she said, yeah, I lost my job. She lost her flat, but she still has to pay mortgage on it. She can't live in it, but she has to pay for it. She still has to pay the money to the bank or whatever, even though she can't live there. She's homeless, but she has to pay mortgage. You know, this is happening. And she said, because she had met the devotees before, and she was kind of, she said, but the Lord's taking care of me. Someone gave her a free place to stay in a nice, right on the beach, beachfront. And they're giving her food, her room to do her some kind of massage she does or something. And then we met her on the beach, and then we said, well, all you need now is to chant Hare Krishna. And she took the beach, and she started to, so now she's chanting too. So have that connection with Krishna. But you can see that people, there are people who can, because she has some contact with Krishna consciousness, she was able to be equipoised in such a situation. Yes. And our temple president in Christchurch, he just found out when I was there that they just put his house in the red zone, which means that his house will be demolished and he has to move out. And there's nowhere to move because all the land is already sold, or that people have bought so much land. There's no place to rent, and the rent is 3 times. So, what do you do in such a situation? And the tremors are still coming in Christchurch. I felt one the night before I left. And there were many which I didn't feel, but they're very sensitive, so they feel all of them, even small ones. I think there were about 10 or 15 while I was there, small ones, and one little bigger. But they're just living there, and they're depending on Krishna. So we learned from the ocean to be equipoised. Now our next guru is the moth. So now we have the example of the water coming into the ocean. It's raining very hard. But the ocean is not disturbed. So the moth is one of the 5 gurus that will help us to control our 5 senses, our knowledge-acquiring senses, that is the sight, the sound, the taste, touch, and what's the other one?
Smell.
Very good. So the moth is the guru of sight. It will teach us about how to avoid being captivated by our eyes, what our eyes see. The moth, and then the fish. So the moth is killed by his desire to enjoy what he sees. The fish is killed by his desire to taste the bait that the fisherman gives. Elephant is trapped by exploiting its desire to touch a captive female elephant. A bee, by which sense? Smell, by smell. And the deer, by sound. The hunter plays a flute, and the deer comes, and he's captured. So the first guru is the moth, and the moth goes into the fire. In India, you can see, because you still have candlelight, and the candlelight is there, and when the lights go out, you light your candles, and so many little insects and moths go into the fire. Because they think it's their trap, and think, oh, wow, this is beautiful. And they go for it, and they're finished. So, how to avoid this? Srila Prabhupada said, our thoughts are, someone asked Srila Prabhupada, how do I avoid this lust? Prabhupada said, our thoughts are always changing, that is the nature of the mind. So you cannot expect, even the great saintly persons are free from thoughts coming and going, but after thinking, there's feeling and willing And willing is the stage of putting your thoughts into action. So if we use our intelligence, then we can kill the thoughts before they can manifest in activity. So we have to daily sharpen our intelligence by reading, discussing, and preaching to others. So this is how to control the mind. So don't be captivated by the sense of sight. Bhavananda Prabhu asked Srila Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I'm so lucky, my eyes go everywhere." Prabhupada said, "Oh, that means you are going to go blind." And Bhavananda said, "Blind to material nature, I hope, Srila Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "No, blind." So, watch out. If you're too attached to what you see, you may go blind. Now, how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality of sight? Once a taxi driver asked Prabhupada, "Do you sleep on a bed of nails? Because you're a Swami." You're a Swami from India. Prabhupada said, "This is not a great thing to overcome pain. You can just take some medicine, some drugs, and your pain will finish. But a real Swami is one who is self-controlled, just like one who can sit in a room of beautiful women and not be agitated." So that's the real Swami. Sight. Controlling the sight. So there's one more example. Shukirti gives. When he was traveling with Srila Prabhupada in a train in Switzerland, a luxury train. So they were going around the Alps, beautiful mountains, and they were looking at all the sights, and Shukirti was pointing out to Jai Hari, they were pointing, "Oh, look at that, oh, look at that," and they were just looking out the windows, sitting next to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada quietly chanted. Then he said, "What do they call this place?" And Srila Kirti said, "Oh, St. Moritz, Srila Prabhupada, St. Moritz." He said, "I was delighted with the opportunity to answer such a simple question." "They may call it St. Moritz," Prabhupada said. "I call it St. Hellish. This place is hellish. Look out there. There's no life anywhere, just branches of trees and snow. There's not a living thing for miles." Prabhupada had effectively turned our illusion into an opportunity to instruct two of his fledgling disciples. So they were captivated by the scenery. So then he said, "Jai Hari and I spent the rest of the journey with our heads down, quietly chanting and hearing the transcendental sound vibration of the Maha Mantra, just as Prabhupada desired." So they, that was enough of the sightseeing for them. And so we have to be careful. And I think I heard that one time Prabhupada was walking here in the Botanical Gardens in Melbourne, and their devotees were appreciating, "Oh, the beautiful trees and the flowers and everything." And Prabhupada said, "They're all suffering so much in those bodies because they cannot move." He said, "But even in that suffering, it still looks beautiful." And so the pure devotee, when they see things, they see with a whole different vision than we do. We think, "Oh, this is a nice thing for our eyes to see." So how can we apply this lesson to our life tomorrow? We can see Krishna. As somebody with you were telling me, when you chant your Maha Mantra and you look at the lotus feet of Krishna for 2 hours, and all you see the whole day is those lotus feet in your mind. So that is why Prabhupada gave us the deities, that we look at the deities in the morning and we meditate on them. And the whole day we remember them. And during our day, whatever we're doing, we remember, "Oh, Krishna was wearing this. And this morning we had the Abhishek. Oh, I remember the yogurt falling on the deities, and the honey and the juice." And so we can spend our days like that, remembering Krishna, what we saw in the morning. That's one way we can apply it. Tomorrow, go to the reading of the deities and study very carefully what they're wearing and try to remember. Sometimes I ask devotees, and devotees ask me, "Oh, what were they wearing today?" And you can't remember. What were they wearing, actually? And today it was pink. That I remember. So, the lesson of the sight we learned from the moth. And the honeybee, of course, one lesson is the lesson of smell, because the honeybee, in India, the lotus flower, it opens in the day and closes at night. So the bees, they like to go inside the lotus flower. And I had that experience as pujari when I was in Calcutta temple. We used to have 144 lotus flowers every day offered to the deities, big, big lotus flowers. And the back window in front and back of the deities was open, and so the bees used to fly inside. And on Radha Govinda's side, these two big bumblebees would come in, and they would come and sit inside the lotus flowers. So sometimes I'd walk in the deity room, and I would have a lotus flower and Krishna's flute, and one bee would fly out of it. So Srila Prabhupada said, when the bees come to the deities, that means Krishna's pleased with the deity worship. So our evidence was flowers there, we had a lot of flowers. But what do we learn from the bee? So what happens is lotus, of course, those lotuses didn't close at night because they weren't living. But if you go to the lakes where the lotuses are blooming, they're open in the day and they close at night. So if the bee is too attached to that lotus, then he dies at nighttime and he's finished. So therefore, we learn from the bee a madhukari. Madhukari means you take from different houses, just like a bee takes nectar from different flowers. So he doesn't go to the same house every day, or else he may go to the same house, but he takes very little, like one chapati or a little doll or something. So in Vrindavan, people do this, some people. Srila Prabhupada used to do this, so we'll talk about that a little later. So one lesson is not to... And he taught the sannyasis that when he went to Africa, the first time he went, he never spent more than 3 days in any person's house because they didn't have a temple in Africa, in South Africa, when devotees first went there. So they had to just live in different people's houses. So he wouldn't spend more than 3 days in one house. He would just go from house to house like that. So this is the lesson of the honeybee. And another lesson is how the honeybee takes nectar from all the flowers. And this is, we should take the essence of all scriptures. The Saragrahi Vaishnava, he sees how all the scriptures are teaching the love of God. And he is non-sectarian, he's universal in his thinking, and non-sectarian in his approach. Religion is like a human being, and the body of religion is like its external principles, its customs, its rituals. And people who emphasize this aspect in terms of us and them, they just see the external and then they fight. And this is the cause of fights. But the soul of religion is embraced by the mystics, the saints. They see harmony in all spiritual truth. And one time my brother, he was challenging me on Facebook. And he said, okay, what will you say to a Muslim or something, you know, if you see them? And I said, well, all the great religions teach the same principle, that you should love the Lord and know Him. And I said, we have no argument with any religion, but our spirit, we do see, we sometimes are disturbed by the fact that people do not follow what their masters are teaching them. That they claim to be following a certain religion, but they're not following. So that disturbs us. Not that this religion or that religion, but if you're not following. And Srila Prabhupada, when he would talk to people, he would emphasize that, you know, people of different faiths. And one nun went to see Srila Prabhupada in London, I believe. And she was very, you know, very submissive, and she had her, like, beads. They also chant on beads, the nuns. They have the small beads, and they chant the names of Jesus. And Prabhupada asked, so what are you saying? What is your prayer? She said, my prayer is, oh Lord Jesus, please have mercy on me. Oh, today's Good Friday. It's good to talk about Him. Oh Jesus Christ, please have mercy on me. And Prabhupada said, yes, He will have mercy on you. So Prabhupada gave His blessings to that nun, very fortunate nun. So Prabhupada is very non-sectarian. Peter Prabhu was remembering that he was sitting on a bench in Haight Ashbury in Hippie Hill, and when he was sitting there chanting his japa one day, one old black man came, and he told Peter, you know that old man who started this thing, your movement, he was a cool cat. I was living in the Bowery. And he was living in the Bowery too. So Bowery is where all the drunken people live, all with nothing. But then again, Jesus was born in a barn, and he walked away. So that person understood that Prabhupada was, and he appreciated when the drunks would open the door for him, or make the other ones move out of his way, who were like, they drink so much that they fall unconscious when they lay in the road, or in the way Prabhupada couldn't get in an apartment. And so Prabhupada lived like that in that place for some time, and he even gave classes there. So he was very determined and very simple. Now Prabhupada, he was in Iran, a Muslim country, in 1976. So my godsister Manjari, she was remembering how the Muslims, they have this three times a day, morning, noon, and night, they have loudspeakers and they have a chant calling everyone to prayer. And they say, so Prabhupada was listening to these prayers and he turned to Atreya Rishi and he asked, what is this? And Atreya said, oh, this is the Muslim call to pray to God. They're saying the names of God. Prabhupada said, that's very good. They're calling everyone to prayer. And Atreya said, but Srila Prabhupada, isn't it better to say the name of Krishna rather than Allah? And Prabhupada said, you're asking me to be sectarian? So Prabhupada was not sectarian. He appreciated anyone who had devotion. I remember at one time I was in Calcutta airport and there was this Muslim who was saying his prayers and he was sitting on a rug right in the airport and it sounded like a Bengali budget, you know, he was Bengali. And it sounded just like, you know, the way he was singing was just like a Bengali budget. But it was, you know, the Muslim thing. I thought, wow, that's very interesting. And he had so much devotion and he was just like the same as the Bengali budgets. This is very interesting. And so Srila Prabhupada was non-sectarian. He got the essence of all religions. And he would try to, you know, rectify the people who were not following, or who claimed to be this religion or that religion, and who were not following. And Srila Prabhupada also did Madhukari in Vrindavan. Madhukari means going door to door. And one of the Brijvasis remembered Prabhupada, he would go to the door and he would say, Jai Radhe, Radha Madhava, Jai Gaur Hari. And some Brijvasis would give him a rupee, some chapati, some sanji. And there was one Brijvasi where he would go to bake milk every day. And the son of this Brijvasi was remembering Prabhupada. He said, my father used to give milk to Prabhupada when he lived at the Radha Damodar temple in the early 60s. Prabhupada would come daily by our shop with his tiffin, and my father would give him cow's milk for his offering as madhukari. Sometimes if my father noticed Prabhupada had not come for several days to collect milk, he would send me to deliver it. So one time when I came to deliver the milk, I arrived at his door and stood there with a container, but he was chanting Hari Nam very deeply and didn't hear me. So I was waiting there for some time because I did not want to interrupt his devotion. I kept peeking inside his door and I noticed there were many tears in his eyes. As I watched, I noticed on the dirt floor there were some bugs. Then I saw a scorpion crawling on the ground. It was coming close to his feet, but he didn't notice. I made little noises to catch his attention, but he was still chanting and not aware of outside things. Finally, I called out to him, oh, Prabhu, there's a scorpion near you. He slowly opened his eyes, which were wet with tears. When he looked at me, his glance was so deep with feeling and mercy. He just looked at me, and down with the scorpion. I asked him if I could sweep it from the room. In a gentle, grave voice, he answered, no, no, please, don't worry about it. Don't disturb. He is also a devotee. That was Srila Prabhupada. Of course, Prabhupada could probably make that scorpion a devotee, too. If some of his tears fell on him, I'm sure. After some years, this boy is remembering. I saw him again when he came back to Vrindavan with his foreign disciples. Prabhupada looked over and saw me. He called out to me and motioned for me to come nearby. I ran to his feet and touched them in the dust. Prabhupada then embraced me with love, rubbing my head. He said to his students, oh, this is my boy, my old friend. He brought me milk and helped me before when I had nothing. Then Prabhupada took off the necklace of some valuable stones he had on his neck, broke it, put some of the stones into my hand. And we have kept that gift and made those stones into earrings that my wife wears every day. So that was Srila Prabhupada. He remembered that milkman who gave him milk when he had nothing. So how can we apply the lesson of the moth? Is this the moth? No, it's just the honeybee, sorry. The lesson of the honeybee. Of course, we don't do manukai here in Australia. My dear Raj does sometimes. We go to different places to eat. But you can take the essence of Krishna consciousness and practice that. So tell me, what is the essence of Krishna consciousness?
Always remember Krishna and never forget.
Very good.
Never forget him.
Always remember Krishna and never forget him. How do we do that? Chanting Hare Krishna. Very good. You have one. You have understood. The essence is to chant Hare Krishna. Hare Chaitanya said that the essence of all the nine processes of devotional service is to chant Hare Krishna. So you can increase your chanting tomorrow. Following the essence. And our last guru for today is the elephant. And from the elephant, we learn the lesson of touch. So an elephant is captured in the jungle. They put a female elephant down in a hole, and they kind of half cover it, and then the elephant doesn't see, and somehow he sees the female, and he runs, and he falls in the hole, and they capture him. So that's how they capture the elephant. So when we are also desiring to touch things in this world, then we can be captured like that elephant. But Prabhupada, he was very renounced. He was not at all interested in this, in enjoying the senses. Srila Kirti Prabhu tells, Prabhupada's mood of renunciation and austerity were evidenced by his acceptance of whatever Krishna did or did not provide. Whether he had a servant or not, it did not matter. He never asked anything for himself. Srila Prabhupada once said that an attached person pretends to be detached, but a detached individual acts in a considerate, loving manner. I saw Srila Prabhupada demonstrate this in his daily life. Prabhupada treated us all so lovingly, although he was completely detached. But sometimes we see, like in the beginning of our movement, there were people who were trying to be really detached, but they were harsh. Because they were so detached, they were harsh on other people, so it was not a good detachment. Mm. It's not a good type of detachment. It was actually a symptom more of attachment, and you're harsh. So Prabhupada is not like that. Although he was so detached, still he was very loving to everyone. Gurudas tells, once you looked over during the kirtan, and you saw two young girls, disciples, dancing and swaying together, and you directed me to photograph them. And so Srila Prabhupada was always thinking how to spread Krishna consciousness. So I would like to just read one thing on how to apply the lesson of all these gurus. There is one devotee, my godbrother, named Karnamrita. And he has written how he goes about his day. So some of you may have to be in the outside world, and he also has to go out sometimes. He actually lives in the country, but sometimes he goes out, and so he explains how he keeps himself Krishna conscious, even though he may be out doing some shopping or going to the doctor or doing something like that. So listen carefully so that you can also do this. And also his whole day. He says that country living coupled with spiritual practice has helped me to slow down, smell the roses, so to speak. Plus, I do my best to pause before any activity I'm offered to Krishna. It only takes a second, yet it makes a huge difference in my life. Whether getting up from or going to bed, taking a shower, waking the deities, beginning to chant my rounds, going to work, or embarking on a shopping expedition, I want to offer the activity or the day to my gurus and Krishna. So, imagine offering your shower to Krishna before you take a shower or brush your teeth. Or offering, if you have to do some service like cleaning, okay, I'm offering this to you. Oh, we just do things. Okay, I have to get this done fast. Let me finish. But it's good to stop, pause, and offer to Krishna before you do it. Like today, I was trying to practice that because I have to go swimming every day for my health. Today, I remembered Krishna. I said, okay, I offer this to you. I have to, this body is belonging to you, and I have to keep it working and healthy in your service, so therefore, I offer the swimming to you. And I have to just, because when you're over, even over 40, but I'm over 60, you have to do something every day to maintain your body, or otherwise it simply deteriorates and you can't get out of bed. So what I do is swim, walk, and pranayama, yoga, different things, just to keep going, because now I'm traveling for 6 months all over the world, so definitely you have to do something to balance. Somebody, one devotee was explaining to me, His Holiness Jayataka Maharaj was saying, you have to, after you come off the airplane, you have to walk on the grass, or you have to have some contact so you're grounded, so you're not still flying in the air. And so we have to do that. So here, this devotee says, everything is part of Krishna, and everything can be used to serve Him. Applying this principle is how our life becomes Krishna conscious and our activities part of our devotional service. Even if we have only a tiny part of our life we offer to Krishna and a huge part we use for material enjoyment, we still need to hear the goal, the means for attaining it, and gain the faith we can change our life for Krishna's service. Wednesday I went to the local medical clinic. Well, yesterday I went shopping for our family. Before I left, I prayed that the environments I encountered, the people I met or saw, and the situations I found myself in would teach me important lessons for my spiritual and human growth. Interesting. Do you ever think like that before you go shopping? That, okay, please let this mall or this supermarket help me to teach me important lessons, good for my spiritual growth. What can you learn in the supermarket? I don't know. But here, this devotee, he's doing. I pray to be mindful and present in the moment, not just thinking about finishing my task. I didn't want my shopping or waiting at the clinic to be my focus. I wanted to be present or aware enough to notice and observe while keeping an internal prayerful mood. So I saw actually a picture today on the computer, and there were two pictures, and both of the pictures said mindful. And the first picture, mindful, was the mind was cluttered with so many things. The mind was full. And then the second one was showing the mind, and it was seeing actually what was around it, beautiful trees and some grass. Mindful. So are you mindful or mindful? And so that's how you need to practice Krishna consciousness. Is your mind full, or what is it full of? Are you mindful of Krishna? Or your mind is full. Which one is it? When you chant your japa tomorrow, is your mind full or are you mindful? Two ways you can chant or do anything in your life. Mindful of other things or mindful? Mindful of what you are doing. And this was not even this picture I saw was not a devotee, it was just, you know, somebody in the world, but they were making a comment, and it's very important for us devotees also to do this, be mindful. I wanted to be present, to notice and observe while keeping an internal prayerful mood. We become successful at anything through practice and desire. I know if I am able to practice the above and remember Krishna as much as possible, my day will always be glorious, or at least never a waste. And no activity or day will be ordinary. So miracles happen. Like the Bhakti Chitta Maharaj would always say, miracles happen all the time. They can happen all the time. So here he says, another way I could describe this mental state is being present yet detached, like a third person observing myself and my errands and interactions with others. How can I kindly respond rather than rudely react? I try my best, yet I know the results of my endeavor come from Krishna. My real job as a devotee is to remember Krishna, to saturate my life and activities with love for Him. And part of this is seeing other souls with love, since they are part as Krishna. As much as possible, I make the holy name my companion, Not like I did as a new devotee motivated by fear of being contaminated by the dreaded material world or Maya. No, now I want to connect with Krishna and connect everything in my life to his service. So sometimes we think, okay, this part of my life is Maya and this part of my life is Krishna. But no, it should all be connected somehow or other to Krishna. And then we can be peaceful and satisfied. So are there any questions on today's class?
Still not quite clear about the elephant.
Elephant. Yeah, it is a lesson of touch that don't be attached to touching means basically sex life.
No. Is what it means.
Yeah. So that was the problem with the elephant. He was after the female elephant and he fell in the hole. So to control your sense of touch. Anything else? Yeah.
Mentioning about how a person is sometimes detached, shows that he is detached but he is very harsh.
Mm-hmm.
But Prabhupada was not like that. He was detached but right. He was actually very affectionate.
Yeah, he was very gentle.
Loving.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned that such people who are so-called detached but harsh are actually quite attached.
Yes.
So how do we understand it? Like the detachment and harshness but actually they are attached. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, if you're harsh while you're detached, it means that you're constantly meditating on that thing, usually, that you're detached from. And so you're upset when that object comes in your view. It's like love and hate. It's the same thing, actually, because the meditation is the same. Whether you love someone or hate someone, you have the same meditation. You're meditating on that person or that thing that you love or hate. So if you are detachment in an unhealthy way, it means aversion. So there's healthy detachment. Healthy detachment means that you're attached to Krishna and you're happy in your spiritual life. And unhealthy detachment means that you are always meditating on what you're supposed to not think about and what you're supposed to give up. And I remember we were having one Bhagavatam class, he'd been done, and it was very interesting. And when Prabhu Ramachari was talking about the family life and how, you know, it's just like eating samosas. And so the girl sitting next to me said, I wonder what samosa he's going to eat. And she became his wife. That was very interesting. That girl who made the comment was the samosa became that samosa. She also, we have to be careful what you say. So anyway. Yeah, there used to be like that in this one. And although the majority of the people who were talking like that all got married or left Krishna consciousness and got married or whatever. So you have to have balance. I should probably misbalance. And there has to be a respect for everyone. So, and also you see these, like, even in the histories, in the Bhagavatam, Vishwamitra Muni was practicing celibacy and he was in his mystic meditation, and then somebody came to disturb and he got angry and he fell down. And so there's a lot of examples where they get, you know, the anger is there, but then they fall down also. So, it's reverse meditation is not good. But we, of course, we have something very wonderful to meditate, and that's even Krishna. So, therefore, a real brahmachari, a real sannyasi, they will be always so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and they will be kind to everyone. They will manifest their kindness to whoever they need. I know in Belfast there's one brahmachari. He used to be, the whole temple was all women and one brahmachari. And he remained brahmachari his whole life and very, very sweet and very renounced and very kind person. Very amazing. Yeah.
I was thinking in this regard, one of the four verses, whenever we don't see anything in relation to Krishna,
mm-hmm.
It's called illusion or...
Right, that is Chatushloki Bhagavatam.
Yes, and I was thinking you can see two ways, you know, karma is to see everything for their enjoyment, jnanis, they see everything is aversion and danger to them, and they don't connect to Krishna, so they have jnana. So they're Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his book says the jnanis, when you attain jnana, knowledge, you don't see things in relation to Krishna. But one devotee, because they have sambandha, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said they are harsh, they are hard-hearted, because they don't see that connection with Krishna. But once you see that connection with Krishna, you have this sambandha jnana, and then you become like Prabhupada. And exactly what you said, aversion and hate is just the other side of the medal. It's just not giving a proper realization and knowledge.
Well, the meditation is the same. In love and hate, same meditation you have. It's only one is aversion and one is attachment.
That's because we don't connect things to Krishna. We don't see, for example, my child, I'll see it as mine. And everything will go around, you know, like, but if you see that this is Krishna's, then I have to treat him this way or that way. Or anything. Like the body you were mentioning, this is Krishna's body, I have to look after it. Otherwise, you can see it all is giving you pleasure or giving you trouble and hate it.
Right, exactly. And some people say, oh, it's just a bad, you know, throw it away. No, can't do that. You have to take care of it. Because it's not for you to enjoy your throne. We've given ourselves to Krishna and his service, and the body is connected and it belongs to him. It's not our property anymore. Used to be, but even then we can't keep it, so it's not ours. And then it's taken away at death, so our body is never our property. It actually belongs to Krishna. Even what we think is our body is not our body. It doesn't belong to us. If it belongs to us, then we can keep it.
Yeah.
Or we can't keep it, so it must not be belong to us. Any other questions? Yes.
Is there a sort of code of morality that you've found practicing your Krishna consciousness that's kept you honest and on the rails that Prabhupada said that you...
Code of morality?
Yeah, well, many years ago we met one devotee. He said, I stole a lot of money and I donated it to the temple. And the brahmachari next to him was saying, that's fine. I thought, no, that's not right.
Well,
I don't want to know these people. I don't
yeah.
So what I'm trying to ask you, if you could share with me or everyone some sort of code of morality, meaning you know, that keeps you honest, which you know, that keeps you honest, keeps you faithful to the path. And you know, because a lot of people can say, oh well, I'm doing this for Krishna, you know,
Srila Prabhupada in one purport he explains that we cannot do something whimsically and say, okay, this is for Krishna. That we have to follow authority. So what keeps you honest is when you have to be responsible and have to report to somebody what you're doing. If you're independent of authority, then you have no morality, because you can do whatever you want. But if you accept authority, and authority, there are three authorities, there's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And so that is how we keep ourselves. There's a system of checks and balances, just like in the modern day governments. In America, they have the justice, they have the president, and then they have the parliament, or whatever. So we have our three, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. They are the systems of checks and balances. So we may have a bright idea of something to do, and think, oh, well, this is great, this is such a good idea. But we have to first consult with Guru, and we have to consult with Shastra. Is this according to, does the scripture say this? Is this a good thing to do? And then we have to consult with our peers, or the sadhus, the Vaishnavas, or senior Vaishnavas, or perhaps our own peers. Like if we are senior, then we have to consult with our peers. So these three we need to check, and then we can be moral. Whatever we do, even if we know it's right, like Prishna Maharaj, when he was faced with death, then he decided, okay, I'm going to just sit here on the bank of the Ganga and ask and hear Krishna Katha. But he didn't just do it. He consulted with all the sages. And he said, you please tell me, what should I do now? Now I'm faced with death. What is my duty? And they confirmed, hearing, chanting, remembering, wishing, this is what we should do now. Keeping it with Sami, he confirmed. So before we attempt to do anything, change anything or do anything in our lives, then we need that confirmation. We need the blessings of Guru. We need the blessings of the Vaishnavas. And then that is moral. That is our morality. And so I have all these bright ideas, but then I always consult with the Vaishnavas. Is, what do you think about this? And what is your experience of doing this service? If I have faith. I have a change of service, or somebody wants me to do a different service, and I go to people who are doing that service, and I say, okay, so what are your challenges? What do I have to watch out for? And can you give me your blessings? Do you think this is a good idea for me to do this? Can you give me your blessings? And some, I have done that, you know, in the past years, and sometimes they'll say, no, this is not a good idea, you shouldn't do this. But then they'll give me blessings to do something else. And so that's how you keep morality for devotees. Instead, you go, you have to always seek the blessings. Now, okay, so I want to go rob a bank. What do you think? And give the money to Krishna. better you ask permission.
That's where the association of the devotees comes in.
Oh, yeah, that's sadhu. Yeah. See, there's three, guru, sadhu, and shastra. And there are examples of people who did do that service for Krishna, but they were thieves by nature, but who became devotees. And so they kept doing what they knew how to do, but we don't even take that. That was like the one in South India, they have these 12 Alwars, or some sort of incarnations, and one of them was the king of the dacoits, and he became a devotee. But he still did his, he went and he was robbing all the rich people, and then he built a huge temple in South India. But we don't do that. We don't do that kind of thing. Prabhupada did not instruct us to do that. So, don't do it.
I'm not tempted. Fortunately.
Thank you. I know, we've heard stories.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are stories. But I know some of the ladies that went to jail for that, too.
Mm.
But they made the prisoners devotees too. At least they did some service in the jail.
We're very lucky here in Melbourne because we have a very. They say in Sydney we're very conservative.
Hmm. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But some of those people, devotees up there, will take the consequence.
Hmm.
I think we're very lucky here in Melbourne that we have a community where corruption and
mm-hmm.
politics are kept
wonderful.
Away. We're not interested.
How glorious. How glorious to Melbourne Temple.
Mm.
Yes, it's very difficult in the age of COVID. Even
because we commit mistakes. We,
yeah.
We're prone to make mistakes.
Yeah, it's very difficult in the age of COVID to not commit offenses and to do these things. Because some people, it is their nature to go rob the bank or whatever. Yeah, but that's not sanctioned. It's not sanctioned by authorities. It's not what we're meant to do. It's not one of the four varnas. Of course, there is no varnasham, but still, it's not recommended. And then, so that's what you do. If Supercell tells you to do something, well, you better go consult with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
What about the devotees who don't have a personal guru? They haven't been initiated to a Miskan guru, only have Prabhupada.
Okay, so then they let them accept Prabhupada,
mm.
and then Prabhupada and the Shastra, Prabhupada's books,
mm.
let them. And then, but still they have to accept the devotees,
right. yeah.
sadhus, who are living actually the Shastra. You need an example, living examples of how to do it. I mean, you can read Prabhupada and how he did it, but It's very powerful if you see somebody actually now doing it, able to do it in this time and age, somebody who's practicing. So that's the sadhus, that's the devotees. The devotees are practicing. And so they have experience and they can help you. Just like if you want to be a doctor, Prabhupada will always say, You can read the books, but unless you learn from a doctor, then you can practice like that, then who will accept you? You can say, okay, I'm a doctor, I read all the books. You think somebody is going to go and say, whoa, okay, you're a doctor, I'll come to you. No, it's somebody who's approved, who's gone through the practice, who has learned from another doctor and other doctors, he will be accepted. Not someone who says, well, you know, in my heart, I feel I'm a doctor. And I read the books, and so now I'm practicing. No, he's not qualified.
That's how people claim to be spiritual.
Yeah, exactly. There was something on ISKCON. There was this one Indian person in America. He decided to see if he would make himself a guru and just see if people would follow him. And he did it, and he got quite a following. And then he made a movie to show how actually he just made it up. He just made up a lot of things and made up a whole philosophy. He took it from the Marines, even be as good as you are, or something. Change it into Sanskrit. And he got a following. And then he made a movie to show how he just cheated the people. But they said, no, don't do that. Then people will lose faith in all the gurus. And he said, no, they should just know that they're not to be cheated. And so, yeah, it's because people don't know. And they didn't think anybody. He looked like one, you know. He had long hair. He had a trident. He had saffron. He looked really mystical, and he just, you know, went and tried it. And there are people like that, actually. Like even some of our, one of my friends, he was preaching in Nepal, and he went to one of these so-called gurus, and he challenged him. And the guy finally admitted, he said, you know, I used to be a devotee in Jubu Bombay, and but I wasn't doing so well, so I thought this would be a better way. So he challenged the guy, and he found out he was a blue devotee from ISKCON. So these things are going on. There are people, yeah, the morality. There's no morality. And he didn't even have mystic powers or anything. He just knew a little bit of our philosophy, which is very powerful, our philosophy. So they say in the hands of the jewel and the head of a serpent is very dangerous. If you misuse it, then so many people can be enslaved. So any further questions?
Guru is consulted after any consulting group. Is it necessary to consult Shastra and
yes.
On the three letters?
Yes. It's very... So the question is, if you consult your guru, is it also necessary to consult Shastra and Sadhu? Yes, because if you think only my guru is everything, then that could lead to offenses to others, or it could lead to problems later on. It's good to have a balance. Make sure you get everything covered. And you say, you can tell, my guru has advised me this, please give me your blessings. You can go to be humble. Go to the sadhus. My guru has advised me that this is good. What do you think? Also, how shall I do this? Give me your blessings. Okay? Yes?
It will mean that you are
overruling guru's advice. No, you're not overruling. You just want the blessings of the Vaishnavas and advice how to do it. To please your guru, you can take advice how to do it. Not, okay, should I do this or should I not do this? That's not how you do it. Just say, you know, okay, how can I do this nicely to please my guru? Give me your blessings. Okay, now my guru says this. What do you think? Should I do this or not? Not like that.
How should I do it nicely? Take the blessings and support from them, not ask them is it right or wrong.
You don't judge what you're doing, but you just ask them for, you know, how to do nicely. Yes, you have a question?
Regarding the harshness that comes out when you're not properly detached,
the harshness. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, enviousness, is that a part of that harshness, or is that a whole separate
No, it's part of it. Aeneas is part of the harshness that comes out when you're not properly detached. It comes out because you may be seeing another person who is really detached, and they're not upset or disturbed, and so you get upset because they're not disturbed. And they're really detached, and you're having a hard time being detached. And so, yeah, it can be like that.
How do you move from that?
How do you
move from that point?
Move from the point of harshness or envy? Yeah, well, we chant Hare Krishna, and we pray for others. Yeah, anybody we have problems with, we can pray for that person for their best benefit. And that will help. If you have a problem in a relationship with a person, then you can write down 10 reasons. Thank you, Krishna, for giving me relationship with this person because, 10 reasons because, thank you, and then your relationship will improve. So 5 gurus for tomorrow, that is, we have python, ocean, moth, honeybee, and elephant. So try to remember. I think the ocean will be easy, right there, and or any of the others, and parts here, like Hare Krishna.